An American police officer forcefully enters a house and shoots dead an apparently unarmed 18-year-old. The fact that the victim was black has again raised questions about discrimination. On this edition of News Analysis, we're asking how far American security forces are going, not just in this particular case, but also against months of Occupy protests.
18-year-old Ramali Graham died last Thursday after a police officer chased him to his grandmother's apartment and shot him in the chest, in front of his family. Police claimed the teenager was trying to flush down a pack of marijuana when shot. Lawyers say even if he was carrying drugs, it would not have justified his killing. Graham was unarmed at the time of the shooting, and police did not have a warrant to enter the home. The lawyer of the victim's family say NYPD's fatal confrontation was, quote, unlawful. Jeffrey Emden says the police had no right to use force against the unarmed teenager.
A man who was shot 27 or more times, presenting his identification to the police. They thought his wallet was a gun. Back in November 2006, you had Sean Bell, who was a man preparing to get married, and the police shot 50 times into a vehicle, killing the man. And over again, the police are exonerated.
The incident has sparked street protests. The protesters are denouncing the police actions as brazenly illegal. Experts say the shooting can be linked to the NYPD's aggressive street policing program called Stop and Frisk. Critics say the program predominantly targets low-income minority neighborhoods. The NYPD searched some 500,000 New Yorkers in 2011 under the initiative. 85% of those searched were African American or Latino.
So there's a professed America that puts out these lofty ideas, and then there's an actual America in which maybe 80 million poor Americans live in. And of that, maybe 50 million of African Americans and 60 million Latinos in this country may not be treated equally.
Rights groups have also come out against the police measure. The New York Civil Liberties Union says the public has every reason to question whether this shooting was the product of the NYPD marijuana arrest crusade or whether it is the product of their hyper-aggressive stop-and-frisk program. Donna Lieberman, who is the executive director of NYCLU, has also reiterated that the incident isn't just a collateral damage of policing in a big city. She says the NYPD has adopted certain policies that are off the charts.
The militarization of the police force, and they're doing exactly the same thing they'd be doing in Afghanistan or Iraq. No questions asked. You're a terrorist unless you're proven to be innocent.
Joining me now live from Washington is Randy Short with the Dignity, Human Rights and Peace Organization. Also with us live from New York with the International Action Center, Caleb Maupin, and author and human rights activist Frederick Alexandra Mead with us from Atlanta. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. I'd like to put my first question to Randy Short in Washington. Randy, the police officer in this particular case, we're hearing, is still working. There's been contradictory police accounts on this case. Why do we see what's become, unfortunately, a too familiar response to these kinds of incidents?
It's systematic, and it's old. You have been hearing about these cases in the United States for over 100 years. The United States is a country that has gross human rights violations against its non-white citizens. In many ways, the police is simply implementing an unstated policy that people who are not white really don't have the same worth of their lives as white people. And that it gets even worse depending on their income level.
Let's bring in Caleb on this as well. Caleb, now we're of course seeing the protests that have been taking place, what the family has been saying. Do you think that this family will see justice in this case, and what would be justice in this particular case, in your view?
Well, what happened is just the latest episode in an entire endless string of episodes like this. Over and over and over again in the United States, the police murder someone, blatantly murder someone, and get away with it. And it is horrific. You know, you can go back to Amadou Diallo.
That's right.
You know, you can go back to, I mean, when I was in Cleveland, I worked around the case of Brandon McLeod, who was shot in his apartment in Cleveland. Over and over again, the police murder someone, they get away with it. And it happens over and over and over again. And it really shows all of this talk of about serve and protect and law and order. You know, the police are serving to preserve and protect the system and serve and protect keeping the powers that be in place. And they ruthlessly gun people down and get away with it all the time. And if there's going to be justice, it's going to come from the people being in the streets and demanding it. The only reason the police who brutalized Rodney King were ever forced to come to justice was because the streets of L.A. were up in flames with a rebellion. The L.A. rebellion is what forced the Rodney King situation to come to head. But if it hadn't been for that, they would have just done what they normally do, which is they get away with it. The Sean Bell case, they've gotten away with it. Oscar Grant shot through the head, they've gotten away with it. So it's up to the people to cause chaos in the streets, to demand that something be done about this, that they don't just get away with this like they usually do.
In Atlanta, Frederick, let's have your view on this. Links are being made in this case to the NYPD's Stop and Frisk program. We had that mentioned in our report as well. Do you agree that this program is in itself too aggressive and even more is discriminatory?
Well, absolutely. As you mentioned in the introduction, last year you had 500,000 people stopped and frisked, 85% of which were Black and Latino people. So clearly, these procedures are discriminatory. There's no question about it. The policy nationally with respect to Black people and law enforcement is these people have no rights. They're subhuman. Therefore, the police have been given the
That's
power
right.
to do what they will with these populations. The killing of Mr.
Right.
Graham is but just another story in a long list of African Americans who have been mistreated by law enforcement officials. As we mentioned before, we had
That's
in the
right.
same neighborhood, you had the killing of Amadou Diallo. This was an African American man gunned down. You had in 2006, I believe, you had Sean Bell. He was gunned down, unarmed. We saw in Oakland, in the Bay Area of California, we had Oscar Grant. He was gunned down. These are all but a few stories of many of African-American unarmed young men who have been gunned down ruthlessly by law enforcement officials. And almost every time, very seldom is there a case where the assailants are found criminally responsible. We may get justice in the civil courts, but very seldom do we receive justice in the criminal courts. And I would like to believe that perhaps this time, if the people get in the streets, if the activists are really doing what they need to do, and enough people are paying attention, this family may receive justice.
And Randy, well, we heard that the victim's sister saying in reports, it's not just about Ramadi, my brother, it's about all Black young men. And you said earlier in your remarks that you agree with that. So would you say, for instance, that if this young man was not Black, that this would not have happened to him?
It's highly unlikely, but I want to go back to what the gentleman was saying in New York and mention that the difference between the cases that he's described and the Rodney King issue is that an African-American international human rights organization called the International Human Rights Association of American Minorities appealed to the People's Republic of China and other nations within the UN to threaten to talk about the racial situation in the United States. They brought up the Rodney King issue. International pressure had more to do with those officers being prosecuted than what happened in the streets. We need international support for people to recognize that white supremacy is terrorism against people of color in the United States. And with the dual pressure of people looking at that, that's where you can demand justice. The civil rights movement and every movement that we've had going back to abolition has had international pressure where they recognize that there's something fundamentally wrong with how people of color are being treated in the United States, whether they're legally held as slaves or if they're legally mistreated as second-class citizens.
Mm. Caleb, obviously, the officer involved in this case we know went too far. Even if this does land him in jail, still the question remains, why are they using such tactics?
Well, they're using such tactics because they want to maintain order in the United States. This country isn't ruled by the people. It's ruled by the wealthy, the corporations, and the bankers. And they're seeking to maintain order, and they're ruling through terror. And we've seen that at Occupy Wall Street. If a bunch of youth get in the streets and want to demonstrate, they'll learn what the freedom we always hear about in the U.S. is really about. We'll learn that it involves getting orange nets thrown on you, getting mace in your face, and getting pepper sprayed and clubbed. And right now, the NYPD is an arm of the government that serves the corporations and the bankers. And the fact that people are protesting about it can only that's the only hope that exists. People cannot continue to let this go on, and I can only hope that the Occupy Wall Street movement can join with the forces protesting this brutal murder and see that the forces repressing us serve the same system, and that it's our job to stand up and resist.
Mm. And Frederick, would you agree that according to one human rights activist that was mentioned in our report, this wasn't just the collateral damage of policing in a big city, but the result of certain policies that are, in her words, off the charts. Now, what do you think about that?
Well, absolutely. We talked about the stop and frisk, where you have half a million people being stopped on the street searched by law enforcement officials, and we stated that 85% of them are African American or Latino. In this society, in American society, we have African Americans, Latinos, people of color who are discriminated against with respect to law enforcement. In this country, there's this idea that African Americans, Hispanics, etc., are more criminally inclined. That is, that they're more likely to engage in crimes, and it's a function of genetics. That is inherently, there's something embedded in their DNA that makes them more likely to engage in crime. Well, we know that this isn't so, but this is the idea that many people in this society possess. Well, law enforcement officials are no different. They have these same prejudices, and they act upon them. And these prejudices are interwoven in the policy with respect to the law enforcement officials and people of color. The policies that you see instituted in cities all across this country, on the surface, are supposed to be policies that will protect the safety of all Americans. And in so doing, what those who are in charge do is they simply apply them more to African Americans and Latinos. Mm. So on the surface, the policies seem to be just, and they would be if they were applied across the board. But populations of color and those who are poor are typically the recipients of this imbalanced order. And that's what we see here. So this, again, is a part of the policy instituted not only in New York, but in every major city in this country. Mm. Essentially, these populations live in a police state.
Well, we have been seeing these new policies being adopted, especially since the Occupy protests did start in the United States. I'd like to go back to Randy on this. What do you think, Randy, when we are speaking also about, if you may remember, the National Defense Act that was signed by President Obama at the start of the year? That did cause lot of rage as well, because it's not just, people are saying it's not just about the blacks or the minorities. It's something against the whole nation when police have the authority to stop and search anyone based on just a suspicion.
Well, essentially, the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012, if you read sections, it's 21 through 32. Literally, anybody at any time, depending on if one of the people within the military industrial complex, the upper echelons, decide that you are an enemy combatant, you have no right to a lawyer. What makes it more interesting is that the increasingly poor white populations in the country are going to be subject to the treatment that's always been that of Native Americans, African Americans, Latinos, and others.
So basically, would you say then, Randy, that the American people are justifiably beginning to maybe fear the law enforcement and security forces because of this stop and frisk policies, because of this new National Defense Authorization Act, because they're fearing even their own teenagers could be targets?
Well, beloved, call me Dr. Short if you could. I'd use that professionally. But back to your point exactly, I think that with the Occupy issue, now that people police brutality is occurring against poor whites. They've always been victimized, but there's been this situation that historian Rediger calls the Herrenvogt democracy, where whites always felt better. They tend to ignore their suffering because they're not black. But with this Occupy movement and the increasingly fascistic practices of the state, people are being forced to recognize that they're being treated like blacks. The same situation occurred in the anti-Vietnam War movement, where white students went out and protested against the war, and they were shocked that they were beaten like blacks. That's what radicalized them. They associated brutality from police is for the other races, not for them. So when they go out and encounter the ferocity and the fanatical hatred of the police against them speaking up for their rights, they end up having some sense of solidarity. It's always lacking, however, with those people of color who've been on the front lines for centuries.
And Caleb, now there's been a lot of anger also about the NYPD police commissioner, his role in a video that was shown to police officers against Muslims. Now that did cause quite a rage. What's your view on that?
Well, it really just shows that, I mean, this whole situation is such an articulation of the way in which it is so hypocritical. When the U.S. goes around the world saying it believes in democracy and condemning various countries for not being, quote, democratic enough, yet on their streets they murder people. This video Ray Kelly made, you know, was demonizing people of the Islamic faith. Yet, you know, it's in the United States that his police department routinely murders people, routinely stops people and searches them without a warrant, stop and frisk. And yet he wants to make a video to demonize people of Islamic heritage for not being democratic enough? The hypocrisy in that statement is so blatant and ridiculous. You know, the U.S., this belief that the U.S. is a democratic country should be clear. Get on YouTube and watch a video of what happens to the people at Occupy Wall Street when they take to the streets. Or look at what they've done so many times when they've murdered people and get away with it. And tell me this is a democracy? That's ridiculous. And then to have the leader of the NYPD, the group that goes around enforcing the rule by terror that the bankers and the corporations reign with, to go and make a video demonizing people in other countries? I mean, this is beyond ridiculous. I mean, the NYPD is serving the ruling establishment and is the enforcer of the brutal terror of the bankers and the corporations and the entire capitalist system in the United States, and they have the gall to condemn another country. That is horrific.
And Frederick, would you agree then with this statement that following the Occupy protest, the United States has been intensifying these kinds of policies, even introducing new policies and tactics that are being used by the police, especially against these protesters?
Well, sure. People of color, particularly Hispanics and African Americans, we've been experiencing this kind of behavior from law enforcement officials for years. But with the emergence of the Occupy movement, now white Americans, even middle-class white Americans, are starting to experience some of these measures imposed upon them. I mean, at these rallies, you've had protesters who have been pepper sprayed. In some instances, there's been reports of police firing on them with rubber bullets. You've had any number of, violations of these people's human rights. And again, this is something that African Americans and Hispanics have dealt with for years. But now, white Americans are now starting to experience the wrath of these police departments in their efforts to really quell the movement. And it's not so much to protect the society. What law enforcement officials want to do is destroy the movement. That's really what this is about. They're taking orders from the highest offices, and they are commissioned, essentially, or what their position is that we must crush this movement. And they will do whatever is necessary. Again, we've seen students in California pepper sprayed. We've seen, in some instances, again, a report of a rubber bullet being fired at someone, videotaping the police officers and dealing with the protesters. Mm-hmm. So, again, this is a widespread effort on behalf of law enforcement officials to put down this movement. But one thing I would say, the protesters have been very resilient. They've stuck to their guns, and they're still out there. Mm-hmm. And I suspect they don't have any intentions of giving up anytime soon, and more power to them.
Right, back to Washington. Dr. Short, do you think then the fact that we are seeing these tactics used against a larger number of people then is going to change anything on the ground?
I think that there are a combination of things. The foreclosures that are forthcoming, hunger that's growing. There's a whole generation of people graduating from college with student debts who have no way out and don't necessarily have a future in terms of employment because jobs aren't being created. They're going to find themselves in movements because the pressure will be on to pay the loans, to live, to have a life. And if the policy of the state is to beat people or to jail people or pepper spray them or treat them like second-class citizens, those people who come from the more privileged strata of society are going to find themselves resisting and in greater numbers. And whites tend to be less tolerant of abuse than blacks. And so it will be interesting to see their take on this.
Well, that's the question. Let's put that question to Caleb as the last question and the final comments from him. In less than a minute, Caleb, if you can tell us, do you think then that these kinds of protests by the Occupy movement is going to force the authorities to rethink or review these tactics?
Protests, demonstrations, being out in the streets, that's the only thing that's ever changed anything in the past. You know, never has change come through, you know, begging a politician here or there. It's always been when people are out in the streets in big numbers, risking this kind of brutality and challenging the status quo that we've ever won justice. That's the only way justice has ever been won. So I do think that if there's any hope for changing this situation where this kind of brutality goes on, if there's any hope for that, it comes from being in the streets and demonstrating in huge numbers.
Caleb Maupin in New York with the International Action Center. Thank you very much. A big thank you to Dr. Randy Short with the Dignity, Human Rights and Peace Organization. And I'd also like to thank our guests in Atlanta, Mr. Frederick Alexandra Mead, author and human rights activist. Thank you so much for being with us. From me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team here in Tehran. Until our next program, it's goodbye.